Hello and welcome. I'm Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner.
And I'm Shea Pataja, the co-host of
New Retirement Radio,
the podcast.
Dennis Prout is an investment advisor representative with Capital Asset Advisory Services, LLC, a registered investment advisor. Opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of Capital Asset Advisory Services. The topics discussed and opinions given are not intended to address the specific needs of any listener. Listeners are encouraged to discuss their financial needs with a financial professional.
And we happen to have two of them in our studio today. Welcome aboard New Retirement Radio on WTCM News Talk 580 with Prout Financial Design in Traverse City, Michigan. Joining us now, Mr. Dennis Prout, Certified Financial Planner, and Heidi Thompson, Registered Investment Advisor. Welcome aboard, everybody.
Hey, it's great to be here, Ron. Thank you. Thank you. On today, June 11th. Anyone listening?
Hello. 7-Eleven, you get a free Slurpee.
Yeah, well, actually, it's 7-Eleven, of course. That's called July 11th, for those who are really listening, 2019. And it's great to be here. Today, we're talking about the six changes to Social Security. In 2020. 2020, as Barbara used to say.
Say that six times.
Barbara Walters. Six changes to Social Security in year 2020. Now, before we begin, in case the grandchildren are listening, good morning, children. I miss you already and already thinking about you, and I hope that you liked the vanilla yogurt I gave you for breakfast.
That's like Bill Cosby's routine when he was in charge of the kids.
Yes.
And they were all eating cake for breakfast.
Oh, I remember that show like it was yesterday, indeed. Let's have cake. I'm sure there's something good in it for you, right?
Right. They're eggs.
Yeah. Yes. Anyway, we have a ton of stuff to talk about, including some backstory on taxes, which we think will be helpful too. So stats 2 weeks ago were interesting in terms of where markets are heading. We said on that show that interest rates may likely come down, more and more talk of that happening. And indeed, the markets have been jumping. The S&P 500 for the first time jumped above 3,000.
Amazing.
An amazing.
Which one? Is that S&P? Or?
That's the S&P 500, Standard & Poor's 500. 500 tend to be leading stocks in their respective industries. Very interesting indeed. So six ways Social Security will change in 2020. But before I begin as well, I want to make certain I mention Heidi will be bringing to us her information, how to suspend Social Security benefits.
Right. Just a few helpful hints.
Okay.
Over the last 10 years, the U.S. population age 65 and over has increased by what percentage, Ron, would you guess? Last 10 years.
10 years. The age of people over 65.
Yes.
The percentage of the population has increased by 10%.
34%. A full third.
It's a lot of people.
To more than 50 million. Mm-hmm. 50 million people.
It's a lot of people sitting around and doing nothing.
Well, yeah, of course, it depends. Number one, dipping into the trust fund. First time in 2020, Social Security will begin paying out more in benefits than it receives in revenue.
2020 that
yes,
happens?
Yes, in revenue, which is interest on the assets that they have, which are about $2.8 trillion, as well as the revenue from taxes that they pull in from FICA yeah. taxes from those working still. And that fund revenue accumulated over the last 35 years will be exhausted by 2034. So that $2.8 trillion that they've accumulated will be paid down if nothing is done by 2034, will make then the benefits only available at 77%. So we can just say they'll be cut by a quarter unless the federal government makes that up through their own payments back into the Social Security system.
That's only 15 years away?
15 years. So
yes.
If you are retired or will be retiring, that's a major issue. And the scary thing is whoever is in power politically, younger people,
mm-hmm.
What will they decide to do? Just cut the benefits or raise taxes? What else can they do?
Raise the retirement age.
That's a great point. Because many in the younger set don't count on Social Security at all.
Yeah.
They're very negative about it.
Skeptical.
Yeah.
So I would say they reluctantly pay in their Social Security benefits, which were 12.4% of their paycheck, including they themselves and their employer putting in. But that's a pretty good cut in terms of total benefits that'll be realized, and that is a significant cost that will be realized by our federal government as well, given how much they're already spending on Social Security to help fund it, Medicare, Medicaid, and all the rest. Then, and it makes you wonder whether there'll be some sort of means testing or whether they'll extend the age. Now, right now, there's a new proposal, a new law coming out, which could possibly have an impact, and that's part of Heidi's stats today. Number 13, proposed House Bill H.R. 860 would raise Social Security payroll taxes from 12.4% currently to 14.8% by the year 2043. The combined rate would be raised 0.1 percentage point per year beginning in 2020, next year, if they did that. If that proposal were actually made law.
Would that keep Social Security funded then at its current rate if they did that?
That point does not state that, okay. And I would doubt that it would because it's 0.1% per year. Relatively significant, but I don't know that it's significant enough to make a difference there.
And that would hit Social Security taxes are paid by the employer and the employee.
Correct.
Right? Yeah.
Currently at 6.2% apiece. For those who are self-employed, they're paying the full ride at 12.4 themselves. That is a significant increase.
Yeah.
And what I wrote next to that was pathetic.
Pathetic, he wrote.
Pathetic, I wrote.
It might not be enough. They may need several different strategies to make it work.
It's an increase in the taxes, and frankly, they have made Congress has made some good corrections to some of the overreaching, if you will, benefits from Social Security that were too much largesse, if you will, too big. So I think they've made some responsible changes, but increasing the taxes alone, I think, is a good idea. I think several other changes should be made in concert with that.
A lot of the emphasis now, at least in this campaign, is spending new money on new government programs instead of addressing what this is really an emergency, even though we're, 12 years out still.
Yeah, somewhat like fixing the roads. Right. You know, all of a sudden it gets up close and personal. And if you're trying to do that too fast, look out at what the cost may be. Really expensive. Number two, smaller cost of living benefit most likely for next year. Probably 1.8%. Now, 2019, that was the cost of living increase was 2.8%. It's based on the Consumer Price Index. Well, guess who's not included generally in the Consumer Price Index? Retirees and their increasing cost. So healthcare and all the rest has increased much more dramatically than the actual cost of living a typical retiree. So they're using the CPI for a different population set.
Is that a list of items and services that people buy?
Clerical workers pay, that sort of thing.
Okay.
So they're not looking necessarily at the increasing cost for being retired. Housing costs and health care have increased several times faster than Social Security COLAs during that period. Now, the average cost of living over the last decade has been 1.4%. Social Security benefits, as measured, have lost one-third of their buying power since year 2000, as many of the goods and services, and it goes on to say the same thing I just said. So it's interesting. One-third of the purchasing power has been lost, and taxes, real taxes, have actually gone up as well for retirees. Number three, more benefits will be taxed. This feels like Bad News Bears almost, doesn't it? Even with a meager COLA, cost of living increase in 2020, higher benefits mean more retirees will be subject to income taxes on their Social Security benefits. Now, it's interesting. Wynn's taxes, rather, on Social Security benefits were first imposed in 1983. The tax affected about 10% of senior households. Today, it's about 50%. Nearly half of older household paid paid taxes on a portion of their Social Security benefits. So that's another increasing cost. So the benefits have not increased with inflation, and taxes themselves have gone up because they've not been indexed for inflation. Social Security benefits are taxable once combined income exceeds $25,000 for individuals and $34,000 for married couples, thresholds that have never been indexed for inflation. So that was back in 1983. Yeah.
That's a big jump. So it is.
Those numbers should go up then.
Yeah, over 30 years ago, obviously. Yeah. Huge.
How about
huge change that people don't really, it's almost like the frog in the pot.
The boiling water.
Yes, right. Not so much fun. The same legislation that permitted taxation on Social Security benefits also instituted a gradual increase in the full retirement age from 65 to 67. Now, that was a fantastic change. I think, frankly, I was talking to Andy, our oldest son, about this morning because I was mentioning we were going to be talking about this. And I said if they increased it for, say, those who are age 40 to 45, the full retirement age eventually to age 70 perhaps, it'd make a ton of sense.
Right.
Because when they first started Social Security benefits in the early 40s, no one lived to age 65 then. That was the retirement age.
What, like 30 workers putting money in the pot for every one retiree?
Yeah, I believe it was 42-1 somewhere in there.
They didn't make it past age 50 back then.
Now it's not even 3-1
that
are working for each retiree. Significant change. I was talking to a client a couple days ago who had extensive experience in banking, and he said, you know, Dennis, this whole retirement gig is really taking me much more time to get used to than I had thought. He said, I've been pushing this thing ahead for years and years and years. He's a very good saver. He said, but drawing money out to help fund my retirement, I'm not having any fun doing that at all right now. So it really takes, it's a change. And why are we talking about this Social Security stuff? Well, because it's about your income.
Yeah.
A lot of retirement is the questions and or the answers are part of what is my income? How am I going to cover the expenses? How are we going to cover the things we want to do? But also, what are the taxes? And what are the changes we're looking at? And how do we adjust? So it only makes sense that we talk about Social Security. And I was thinking about earlier about what's the equivalent lump sum we'd need to give us $1,000 a month? Let's say we're getting, you know, $2,000 a month from Social Security. Well, the equivalent portfolio, if we were drawing 4% per $1,000 that we're drawing from income, if we want to maintain the principal generally, because obviously we don't know how long we're going to live, we're going to need about $250,000 in a lump sum to give us $1,000 a month. So that $1,000 a month that we're getting from the pension plan or Social Security, or the multiplier of that is real money. So the equivalence can be significant. And it's important, obviously, to keep track or keep watch of how this is going, right?
Right.
So Heidi's got the Heidi stats today.
Well, I was going to start out with how to suspend Social Security benefits that we mentioned earlier. But before we jump into that, let me read my disclosure so that we keep everything above board. Securities offered through Genios Wealth Management, Inc., member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through Capital Asset Advisory Services, a registered investment advisor. So there was this article in Investment News which talked about suspending Social Security benefits. And this is if you opted to take your Social Security early before you reached your full retirement age, and maybe you went back to work or circumstances changed and you wanted to suspend those payments so that they could grow to a larger future payment. Mm. So you can voluntarily suspend your retirement benefits once you reach your full retirement age. And you can do this by calling the Social Security Administration, or you can also write them and request this to be done. So the suspension, if you do ask for it, would begin the month after you make the request. So, for example, if you contacted the Social Security Administration in June and asked to suspend your benefits, you would receive your June benefit in July, and then August would be that first month.
So you said you have to be full retirement age, 67, in order to suspend.
Well, it depends on the year in which you're born. For those who are born in 1960, the full retirement age is 67. For someone who's maybe a bit older than that, like us, the full retirement age is a bit earlier.
Right. Okay.
Maybe 66 in 6 months or whatever.
So you but you have to hit that age before you can suspend.
Correct.
Right.
So if you suspended because you have extra income or something changed, then say you're getting, we'll just round it off, say you're getting $1,000 a month and you suspend. You're saying if you wait then maybe you're 68 and you say, I don't want to take Social Security until I hit 75.
Well, you can only wait until you're 70.
Oh, okay.
70
is
the maximum.
So it's just 2 years. But by waiting that 2 years in this example, your amount would go up that you receive.
Right, because by delaying your benefits, you would get a delayed retirement credit. And those are worth about 8% a year. Hmm. And in monthly terms, that's about two-thirds of 1% per month. So it can make a difference even if it's only a couple of years.
Now, referencing the previous conversation we had, they're going to cut the benefits anyway in 2035 or whatever year that is. Why would I wait to collect my benefits? Well, it's because the benefits are relative. If they're going to cut the benefits, they're only going to be able to fund the benefits up to 77%. Let's say they were to cut the benefits by that much, the 23%, if they were to do that. Well, obviously, if your benefit is higher, then you're not going to take as much of a cut. You're still going to have more income than you otherwise would have, given that everyone's benefits are cut by the 23%.
And the nice thing is if you change your mind and you want the payments to start before you reach that age 70, you can notify Social Security and they can restart your benefits again. So before you jump and do this, there's a couple of things that you might want to consider. And one of that is how that decision may affect other family members and how you pay your Medicare premiums. So if you voluntarily suspend your retirement benefits and you have others who receive benefits on your record, that would be maybe a spouse or a minor child or maybe a disabled adult child, those would be tied to your benefit. They would not be able to receive benefits during your suspension. Okay. So before you just jump and do this, you want to think through, you know, is anybody else going to be affected by me doing this?
Good point. So it's always obviously not always about you. You may want to contact your financial advisor to discuss this strategy.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously talk to your loved ones as well as to what their income might, how their income might be affected from that change.
Exactly. And there is an exception. As usual, there's always little twists here and there in the finance world. But one exception would be a divorced spouse, because a divorced spouse, if you've been married over 10 years, can draw their benefit on their ex-husband or wife's record for their benefit. And so if they had started taking benefits based on that record, they would not be affected by the suspension.
Good to know.
Got it.
Okay.
So divorcees are not affected by that change. If I'm 68, I've been divorced, my spouse is already collecting benefits on my benefit, my previous spouse, rather, collecting on my benefits, she would, in this case, not be impacted if I stop my benefits or suspend them.
That's right. And you would have had to have been married to that previous spouse for at least 10 years.
At least 10.
Yes.
Good to know.
And so then the Medicare premiums is something else you want to think about. These currently are deducted from your Social Security payments. And if you suspend your payments, then they will bill you and you will be paying those directly.
So when you get Social Security and Medicare, they take your Medicare payments right out of your Social Security.
They do.
Medicare Part B, I believe.
Okay. $135 a month currently as the minimum. It is means tested. The amount of Medicare premium is based on your income. So the premium can go up as your income is higher at retirement as well.
That's right. And then one more little tidbit of information. So say you're listening to the program right now and you have started your benefits and you're like, oh, wait, I may want to do this suspend thing. If it's within 12 months of starting your benefits, you can repay the money that you've received and it will be as if you had not taken your benefits. So you can repay that and start off fresh.
So let's say you were 68 years old and you had started taking your benefit, suspended, but then you said, you know what, I want to pay that money back in that I took for that time. If you suspend within the 1 year period, you're able to pay that back and then take it at age 70 perhaps, and it would have been treated then as though you'd never taken your benefits. So 68, let's say 68 and a half. You get the consulting job of a lifetime in that case. You say, oh, my gosh, I really don't want this income. Well, there's some planning you can do there. You could stop the benefit, not only stop it, but pay back what you've received to Social Security and then continue to delay those credits until you're 70.
Right. And there is some strategic outlook on suspending your benefit in addition to some of the stuff we talked about. Also, the benefit that goes for your spouse if you pass away, if you wait and you have a larger benefit, then that larger benefit would be what the spouse would be able to get.
Great. Correct. So if he or she is going to collect in your benefit anyway, that may be even more reason to delay taking those benefits, given that she may live longer than we do there, Ron.
Yeah, that's what the that's what the stats bear out.
Yes,
can work either way.
They do.
So that's all I got.
Great.
On that suspension.
Exciting. Bryce Harper's decision. Bryce Harper is a professional baseball player.
Yeah.
To sign a record-setting 13-year, $330 million contract with the Phillies was partially based on taxes, according to a recent article by the LA Times. Competing offers from the L.A. Dodgers and San Francisco Giants couldn't overcome the burden of California's top state income tax rate of 13.3% compared to Pennsylvania's low flat rate of 3.07%.
Wow.
So just rounding, 10% difference. $330 million times 10% is, class?
$33 million.
Correcto mundo. Mr. Harper's agent, Scott Boras, said that the tax savings from signing with the Phillies rather than a California team could be almost a full year's compensation.
So he's making $25 million a year on average. I just did that. 13 years, $333 million.
Yeah.
Boy, they're going to regret that in about 5 or 6 years when he's all torn up. And
setting aside the business decision of that.
Yeah.
The taxes.
Looking at the tax side.
The tax side. Isn't it interesting? And I was thinking, the tax ramifications of different competing political realms, if you will, state taxes, they do make a difference.
Yeah.
They cannot make these decisions based on as though they live in some sort of bubble. It's not the case. Each state is competing against another in some form or fashion, with the benefits that they provide, as well as the cost of living in that environment.
Did you know what professional athletes, when they travel, say, to California and play the Giants or the Angels or the Warriors or whatever team they play, they pay prorated income tax, California state income tax, based on their salary. So if you're earning, you know, $100,000 a game, what's their rate over there, 12-13%, you said?
13%.
So when you travel to California as a member of the Pistons and you play the Warriors, you pay the California state income tax for that night. Sometimes two nights. If you go in on Thursday and spend the night, play on Friday, you'll pay 2 days' worth of state income tax, California.
Wow.
Which adds up when you think of all those.
Well, you bet it does.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, it's tough.
High-tax states in the Northeast were losing residents to other parts of the country. Particularly to the warmer and lower cost South. The Census Bureau's recent population survey released late last year shows the Northeast lost more than 350,000 residents to net migration between 2017 and 18.
Wow.
The largest loser was
New York.
Exactly. Right on the money there, Ron. With a net migration of more than 190,000 residents, followed by New Jersey.
Yeah.
Where are they going? Of the approximately 600,000 people who left the Northeast, more than two-thirds, about 400,000 people, moved south. Top destination, Florida.
Florida.
So, case in point, people do make those decisions, and not just baseball players.
Florida has no state income tax, if I'm correct.
Correct.
So, yes. Big difference.
Well, the new tax bill sort of made people see that because they can no longer deduct that on their federal tax form. So it just became a little, maybe a little bit more painful.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And when they sit down with their tax advisor, he or she is saying, you know, you're paying 10% more than you otherwise might, given that you decide to move. That has to be part of the discussion.
Mm.
Real difference.
Yeah.
Heidi's got some Shea stats.
Shea stats.
Since Shea isn't here, I'm going to read these for you. The first one comes from BTN Research. It's as of 6:30 of 2019, the total return of the S&P 500 is 10.4% for the trailing year, 14.2% for the last 3 years, and 10.7% per year for the last 5 years. And 14.7% per year for the last 10 years. The S&P 500 consists of 500 stocks chosen for market size, liquidity, and industry group representation.
Nice.
It's great.
So a lot of positive returns in the S&P.
Amazing.
At mid-year, the S&P was up 18.5% year-to-date. Through 6:30 of 2019, the index best performance at the halfway point of the year since 1997, 22 years ago, when the stock index was up 20.6% year-to-date as of June 30th.
Making a lot of people look over their shoulder, if you will. Man, how long can this thing go?
Right.
We're in record territory in a lot of ways right now, both in price and in time.
And another noteworthy stat is the longest in history, the U.S. economic expansion began its 11th year, or the 121st month, a week ago today on 7/1/2019, making it the longest-running expansion in our nation's history based upon government data that has been maintained since 1854 or for 165 years.
Ron, that's before we were born. I mean, you know, it goes back a ways.
But that 11
before
years,
the Civil War. Imagine that.
The 11 years is expansion since the mortgage crisis then, right?
Mm-hmm.
08?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that comes to us from the National Bureau of Economic Research.
Well.
So there was a baseball one on there.
Yes.
This was interesting. The Baltimore Orioles beat the Cleveland Indians by an identical 13-0 score on consecutive days, June 28th and June 29th of 2019. This is the first time in baseball's 144-year history that a major league team has shut out its opponent while scoring at least 13 runs in back-to-back games. I just find that amazing.
It is amazing because baseball's a game of stats. I'm surprised that's never happened before.
That reminds me of the old quote, how long will the beatings continue?
Right.
Until morale improves, right?
Yeah, well, right.
Obviously, the morale did not improve on the other team. Right?
13-0.
Yes.
Deja vu.
Right. All over again.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So number five, to our point, our previous notes, end of file and suspend bonus is happening. In 2015, Congress made two major changes to Social Security claiming strategies, one of which involved the file and suspend bonus. People who reached full retirement age after April 29th of 16 were no longer allowed to file and suspend their benefits, triggering payments for eligible family members while their own benefits continue to grow by 8% per year. So in this case, I decided to file, and then my spouse, wife, could collect on my benefits. Then I'd suspend mine and let mine continue to grow. So she's collecting as though I was still collecting, but we're getting some more income to the household. Well, that's gone. The last batch of people who filed and suspended by that April 29, 16 deadline will turn 70 the age at which their Social Security benefits automatically begin in 2020. So that's just about done right now. Number six, the last big point related to this, and we certainly do have some other notes here, but spousal benefit strategy disappears as well, which Heidi somewhat alluded to. Second change that Congress implemented in 2015 prevents people who reach full retirement age in 2020 or later from filing restricted claim for spousal benefits. However, people who were born in 1953 or earlier can still use this strategy. So, given that you're born in 1953 or earlier, you can still use the strategy, which allows you to claim half of your spouse's or ex-spouse's full retirement age benefit amount while your own benefits continue to earn delayed retirement credits if you decide to wait this long up until age 70. At that point, they'd have to switch to their own maximum retirement benefit. So there's still some games, if you will, that can be played with your Social Security benefits. And given longevity, why is this important? It's not just the tax. It's what your own current income is, as well as what you believe your longevity is. And in many cases, you should extend that average longevity by 3 to 5 years, especially if you're full of vigor as a Ron Jolly, working out every day, you know? So anyway, it can make a difference in terms of your total income, and count it as a benefit to be really looked at not only what the costs are, but what the long-term benefits can be for you. For those who have financial questions they'd like to discuss individually with us, we are at proutfinancialdesign.com, P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com, or at 231-947-3992, even in the summer season here in Traverse City, we remain open.
You are open.
Crazy. By the way, to allay any fears that we weren't thinking properly, perhaps, on that 6.2% tax on Social Security, the total tax that you're paying is 765. That includes Medicare taxes, so which is 1.45%, to put a fine point on it. All right.
That's your FICA tax, right?
That's the FICA and Medicare tax.
And your employer pays that same amount then?
They do. And most people don't realize that. Yeah. Most don't look at that or understand that the total tax that they and their employer or themselves are paying if they're self-employed is 15.3%, which includes their medical benefits in the future and or to fund their income from Social Security as well. So 15.3 is the total.
There were some companies that when they give a paycheck stub or a pay statement,
yes,
they include your wages and salary compensation, but they also include what they're paying, like in FICA taxes,
yes,
benefits, or anything else. So the employee gets a better idea of what the company's spending,
yes,
other than just wages and salary.
FICA stands for, by the way, the Federal Insurance Contributions Act.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, nice.
It's not a tax run.
So if you feel like making a contribution, go ahead. If not, that's okay.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Now, what's interesting, too, is if you're not at full retirement age, many don't realize that they can still collect at age 62 if they want to from Social Security. But if they have earnings outside, let's say they're still working and they collect Social Security benefits, if you earn more than $17,040 per year, the amount of the cut of your Social Security benefits will be $1 for every $2 above that amount. Be significant.
And
so you really want to take a look at that.
That doesn't make sense. I mean, because it limits retirees as to what they can make. And as we said,
or what they feel like they can make.
Yeah,
no, they still could, but the benefit cut would be significant from Social Security.
If they wanted to go, you know, be a greeter at Costco or work in the local bookstore or movie theater, whatever, just something to stay busy and make a few extra bucks, they limit that. And those are the kind of job openings, at least in northern Michigan, that are that employers have trouble filling.
Mm-hmm. It certainly is a disincentive.
Yeah.
And why that makes sense, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's another huge tax on those who might want to work and collect both sides of the benefit. They've earned that benefit. They're able to take it. Why would you disincentivize someone to make more than $17,000 a year
right,
and still collect their Social Security benefits? To me, it's simply a political football that's been kicked back and forth.
But fortunately, going back to the article I was talking about, you can suspend those benefits if you're coming up towards the end of the year and you think you're going to go over that. You could suspend your benefits and then avoid that additional penalty.
So yes.
There you go.
Use strategy.
That's right.
Yeah.
But there's the law. So how do you get around it in a legal way? Some people would call that tax avoidance, not tax evasion. All right.
Yes.
We don't like tax evasion. We do like tax avoidance.
That's right.
We'll take it.
Thanks so much for listening. You can find us online at proutfinancialdesign.com. That's P-R-O-U-T, financialdesign.com. Also, you'll be able to find us on iTunes and SoundCloud.